Okay, let's give a warm welcome to our warm-up speaker, Susan.
Hi, I'm Susan. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have to do much because it's already so hot outside, so it's already warm. So I'll talk to you guys later. My sobriety date is May 22nd, 1990. And I don't really care to talk in front of people. This is not really a recorder. It's a bomb that will go off at the, if I'm not done by the time my allotted time is over. Okay, Julie's hoping I'll talk a long time, and I'm thinking I might just, maybe 2 minutes. Gosh. Excuse me? You know, she asked me when we were on the way over here, she said, do you like speaking in front of people, you know, having people come to watch us that we know? And I said, well, it's better than nobody being there, except for one person sitting in the back row catcalling. And when I saw David come in tonight, I thought, but this is it. Oh, gosh. My mind is a blank. And I got sober in Stockton. I had gone to a treatment center in the end of February in Stockton. And it was a 30-day treatment center called Parkside, I think. And I passed with flying colors because I know how to conform. And, you know, authority is always like, oh, gosh. And so, and they introduced me to AA, even though I'd been to AA in 86. But I started going to meetings, and they told me to get at least a temporary sponsor and go to meetings and, you know, just do this stuff. So I was going to meetings, and I can remember going to a meeting. I'd been out of the treatment center about 30 days or a week, and I wasn't talking because I was scared to death. And this guy that was a secretary said, you know, any newcomers for their first, second, or third meeting? No. Anybody within their first 30 days? No. No. He said, okay, then who are you? I haven't seen you here before. And my name's Susan. I'm an alcoholic, and everything's fine, you know, because I wasn't drinking, and I was dying lousy inside, but I was really afraid to tell anybody who I was, and I knew that I would be totally rejected, and I just figured that you guys felt about me like I did, and so I ended up going out. I got a 60-day chip and went out again, and got fired, which, you know, the job was my identity. I'd been there for like 12 years. And so I got fired. I went on a real downward slide for about 2 weeks. And then sitting in a car one night in a Walmart parking lot with one of those big jugs of vodka in the back, and I just wanted to die. And, you know, I couldn't think of anything else. And so I called the treatment center, and they told me to come in and talk to them. And they asked me how long I hadn't had a drink, and I lied and said, you know, 2 or 3 days, whatever. So they wouldn't put me in detox. And they said, okay, we think you need to go to a halfway house. And if they told me that when I got out of that treatment center the first time, I wouldn't have gone. Because, you know, I still had an apartment. I had a job. I had an apartment. I had a car. I had all my stuff. I couldn't leave all that. And, but I said, okay, you know, because I was so desperate by that time. And so I called around. They had me call. You know, I had to start doing some of this stuff myself. They weren't going to do it for me. And all the halfway houses in Stockton had to have 30 days sobriety, so I couldn't go in. But I think at that point it was the fact that I made the effort and I was willing to do whatever it took. And I just started going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and I started sharing. And, you know, I can remember being in that that treatment center, and if any of you have ever been in a treatment center, and they have the family time, and I'm standing around this room, and I felt like I was going to start crying, but if I started crying, I was never going to stop. And, you know, I still felt like that when I came back. But I did. You know, my first sponsor told me that, you know, don't worry about what anybody else is thinking or saying or how they take what you say. She said, it's your ass, you're saving. And I took that to heart because, you know, the thing, when I got miserable enough, I knew I had to do something. It was that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And it was either that or die. And both my parents were alcoholics. My mom had killed herself at that time, about 11 years before. And I couldn't do it to my daughter. You know, and that's the only thing that kept me alive. And I do believe that her death is what saved me. Because I just remember the feeling. And my daughter was, you know, a big deal in my life. I drank for a long time. You know, I was thinking about that today. And my sister and I used to sit around drinking, and we'd say, yeah, we're alcoholics, and cheers, and drink it down, and not even having a clue what I was talking about. I got an alcoholic with somebody who drank too much. I didn't realize that from the first time I drank, when I couldn't control how much I drank, when I didn't know what was going to happen once I took a drink, that I was an alcoholic. And I drank at 14, and then I didn't drink again until I was 18. And I remember reading in the Big Book, it's not how much you drink, how often you drink, or how long you drink, or even what you drink. It's what happens to you when you drink. And I could never predict what would happen once I took that first drink. And I didn't understand it at the time. But looking back, you know, I used to take customers to lunch. And in the late 80s, you know, I mean, it was cocktail time at lunch. And so I'd have a cocktail, and then I'd take them back to work, and then I'd go drink the rest of the day. And I couldn't put it together. And you know, sometimes I drank at home mainly, and sometimes I'd go home and have a couple beers and I'd be fine. Other times I'd go home and have a couple beers and start on the wine, and I'd drink the wine until it was all gone. And I couldn't figure out why. You know, but I drank on a daily basis from about the time, for the last 15 years of my drinking. When I was 25, I was with my soon-to-become third husband, and my soon-to-become third ex-husband. You know, I believed in commitment. And he drank wine. I'd never drank wine up until that point. But, yeah, he liked his red wine, so I grew accustomed to it. And I always felt like I was really lucky that I didn't get involved with a junkie, because I probably would have done whatever he did, because that's what I always did. And, you know, anything to fit in, and I want you to like me, so I'll do whatever you want me to do, and until we get to know each other and we start arguing, and then, you know, so on, find somebody else. So by the time 1980 rolled around, I was divorced from that last guy, and my daughter and I were living together. And you know, I was working. I always worked. It's the thing I always, I used to say my personal life is a mess, but you know, at least I got work. And she ended up moving out in 1988, and once that happened, my life went downhill fast because I had no reason to maintain any longer. I don't know if she would have called it maintaining at the time, but compared to what I did after that, I was maintaining. And it only took me, you know, 2 years to get here after that, and there was other drugs and just always alcohol. And I had two DUIs. I won in 1980, and I'd been with some friends in Kingsburg, And we'd been smoking that stuff and, you know, sitting around, and I think it was like in May, and it was really beautiful weather, and you're drinking beer, and you're sitting out there, and all. I decided, you know, I need to go home, me and my daughter, so I drove home, and I was going about 25 miles an hour on 99, almost to Ashland. I almost made it, and I got stopped. And it was devastating, I'll tell you. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me. I was crying. It was just, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. And at that time, there really wasn't a whole lot done to that. I remember going to classes, but I don't remember what was in them. And in 1988, I was doing some other things that you put up your nose instead of smoking. And although some people do that too, but anyway. Drinking wine, and I was driving down the freeway, probably about 75 miles an hour. And I almost sideswiped the highway patrolman. So he was a little angry, and they weren't very gentle on me when they put my hands behind my back. And at that time, in those 8 years, I had changed so completely that it was then, it was like, you know, screw you and the horse you rode in on. And I was in some holding cell in the Fresno jail, and guys are yelling, and I'm yelling right back. And you know, I was like, it was a totally different person. And I didn't see that then. I didn't see it until after I came in the program and looked back on my life, and I saw the progression of the disease of alcoholism. It, you know, it started out real slow, but it ended with a bang. And I will be forever grateful to the people that were at meetings when I came in here, because if there hadn't been any meetings, I'd be dead. You know, if people that hadn't been able to stay sober hadn't kept coming around, I wouldn't be here today. And I have a couple of granddaughters that might join us one of these days, if they're lucky. And, you know, I want to still come to meetings, because the most important thing to me is to be here not only for myself and my support group and the people I know, it's for the newcomer. Because if we're not here when somebody's dying, walking in that door, you know, they have no choice. They have no chance. And I want to be able to give back what was freely given to me. You know, I've never had the unconditional love and support that I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I was nothing for so long that the first person that remembered my name, I was walking down a hallway at Midtown in Stockton, and this woman said, "Hi, Susan," and I was like, "Oh my gosh, you knew my name." I was so surprised, you know, because I didn't think, I thought I was so little that it wouldn't make it. You know, it just didn't make any difference to anybody. And it took a long time to overcome that feeling. And I told somebody recently to look herself in the mirror, which is what was told to me. And, you know, you say, "I love you, Susan." I told her, "Don't say Susan, you know, say your name." Although she could if she wanted to, you know. And so he told me that that's what I should do. "I love you, Susan." And 6 months, you know, I'm saying it. And all of a sudden I realized, you know, I'm looking up in the corner of the mirror. I'm looking at my, over here. I wasn't looking at myself. I couldn't look at myself. And there's been a lot of miracles happen to me in sobriety. There's been, you know, good times and bad times. And it's been life. And life isn't always great. Even though I thought it was supposed to be, I thought once I quit drinking that I'd have these wings to sprout. And you know, this little halo would come up there and I'd be perfect, because my problem was my drinking. Well, no, my problem was me. And those guys I thought were jerks that always picked me, I found out I was the one that did the picking. And, you know, I had a hand in every single little thing that went on in my life. And it takes some growing up to realize that and to accept it and admit it and to not continue doing the same thing over and over again. I thought I wasn't crazy when they said about insanity, and then somebody said, you know, it's just doing the same thing, expecting different results. oh, well, maybe I am now. I still am sometimes, you know. But I don't have enough time to go through all the good things that have happened to me in AA. And I can't remember all the bad things. You know, and I think that's really great. Because it's just, life is really good. I guess I could focus on the bad things if I wanted to. But today I choose to look on the bright side instead of on the downside, because I never want to feel like I did when I got here. And so I keep coming to meetings so I can listen to people who haven't been coming to meetings that come back. And also so I don't start believing what I'm thinking. You know, if I don't come to meetings, I'm going to be with me, and I'm going to start believing what's in my head. My head's going to tell me, you know what, you weren't that bad. In fact, they have some new stuff out. You might be able to try some of that. No, thank you. I like the old stuff. Of course, I'm getting old, so maybe that's why. My husband just turned 67. I tell you what, I never thought I'd be sleeping with a 67-year-old man. Of course, he might never thought he'd be sleeping with a 63-year-old woman either, so I don't know. Anyway, that's it. I kind of covered for you, so you don't have to. Thanks for letting me be here. Thanks, Rick.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give our featured speaker a big round of applause, and Julie.
I'm Julie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Julie.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick, for asking me to come and sharing dinner with us. That was very, very nice. And first of all, I want to get the attention off of me. It's someone's AA birthday today. She's 6 years old. That's Laura over here. So, I'm just thinking, like, we could all sing happy birthday real quick. Happy birthday to you. Back to me, don't you? I kind of like Susan. This is not my favorite thing to do, but I usually don't say no when I'm asked, so not that I get asked very often, but I appreciate you thinking of me, Rick, and I was thinking, all these people came out, it was so hot, and it was just so great that you all support this meeting, or you're either just a bunch of sick bastards and really need to be here, but either way, it's a good thing. Everybody's here. So, I make a lot of really smart ass jokes, so you're going to have to put up with me. I promise I'm going to try not to do the F-bomb. I'll try not to do that. That's somebody was telling me the other day, he's been sober a couple of years, my friend Doug, and he says, well, I just came in here with a filthy mouth. And I'm thinking, really? You got rid of it? Because me, I'm still working on that. Well, I'm not really working that hard, but and the other word I'm going to try not to say is awesome. I was told a couple weeks ago, well, a couple months ago actually, that in my home group that I say awesome a lot. I'm thinking, I was so offended. I'm thinking, whoa, I'm really trying not to say that so much. Well, I also say F a lot. But I didn't really care about that. I'm like, well, that doesn't bother me. So then we started making the joke, well, it's just effing awesome. So anyway, it got to be a big joke. But, anyway, so I'm just so concerned about that. But you know, I think for me it just goes back to all the self-centered stuff. You know, I don't like to do this because I don't want people, like Susan was saying, don't look at me, don't talk to me, don't pay attention to me. I've always been like that. And wasn't married, 19 years now, and I remember when I was younger, I was just like, oh, I want this big, huge wedding, and everybody's coming. You know, when you're 20, you're like, oh, this would be so great. And then I got married when I was 31. I was like, heck no, I don't want anybody to come. They didn't invite anybody, not my mom, nobody. And so me and my husband got married, and that's it. And I just don't like all that attention. And so drinking for me, I love to drink. I love to just blot out whatever's going on. I loved it. So I'm just going to tell a little bit what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, what it was like. I'm just a Porterville girl. I was born and raised in Porterville. My sobriety date is May 15th, 1989, and I'm 49 years old. Holy hell, I just never thought I would be 49 years old. My friend Ray gave me a cup the other day. It says 50. He bought this cup. I said, excuse me, I'm 49. I'm not drinking out of this. Anyway, not till April at least, but anyway. 49, wow. And, you know, I was 26 years old when I got here. And born and raised in Porterville, lived there my whole life. I still live there. And moved away, came back, but I'm still there. And, you know, I lived out, actually, like half Poplar. I lived out in the country. My mom and dad owned a walnut orchard, and they have like a processing plant. I don't know what the heck you call a walnut thing. I mean, I work at a citrus packer now, so I don't know what you call a walnut deal, but we lived out there, and I just have one sister. She's 18 months older than me, and you know, I loved it. I went to a little Pleasant View school out in the country. There were like, you know, 30 kids in my 8th grade class, and I loved living out in the country. I loved, well, until I got older. It gets really boring when you're way out in the country like that, and you're just like, okay, this is boring. But as a kid, I loved it. I loved being in a little school. I just had all my little friends and, you know, a little 4-H girl, all that stuff. And then got into high school. The first time I drank, I was 16. I went on a vacation with my parents to Mexico, and it's a very weird story, but we got stuck in Mexico. They had these four-wheel drives. I got them stuck out by the beach somewhere. We're stuck there for like a couple days trying to get somebody to come and tow us out. And so there were some kids older than me that were there, and so they're all sitting around the fire, and everybody's drinking, and that's the first time I ever got drunk. I was 16, and I'm pretty sure I got drunk just about every time after that. And, you know, I went to high school. I wasn't like, you know, really smart, but I wasn't dumb. But I graduated from high school with a 1.9 grade average. I didn't apply myself very much. After that year, you know, I just started partying. I hung out with the Goat Roper crowd, and, you know, we just partied. All I did, you know, I think about it sometimes, and you always think everybody's partying, really, probably you are mostly the one doing it. But, no, I mean, there was other people doing it too. I wasn't the only crazy one, but you know, I would take alcohol to school. I drank during school. Somebody shared the other night in her year birthday talking about Black Beauties and pink hearts and whites, and I was cheating up. But I'm probably dating myself. I go, well, I'm dating myself because of that. You know, we didn't do, well, I don't know. I'm sure people were doing it. I didn't do coke, crank, all that stuff. I just didn't do that stuff. I was like, I love it. I would take 5 diet pills. Dexedrine or whatever, take 5 of them and go to school. I'm like, why do you have to take 5? I mean, that's just stupid. I would just do stupid stuff like that. And go to school and drink. We would, across the street from the high school, it's all houses now, but it used to be just walnut orchards and other kinds of orchards. And we'd go over there and party and come back to school. And I mean, I would just be drunk. And I had some friends grab me before, just, what are you doing? What if you're going to class? They'd take me home. I'd pass out. And I just didn't think a thing about it. I graduated from high school. It was when they still used to have the graduation at Menanche. They don't do that anymore. I think the year, it's actually stopped doing it that year that I graduated. And so I took 5 king cards for drinking kamikazes on the stage. It was just like, yeah. And I couldn't tell you. Anyway, by the end of the night, I'm drunk. I was in love with Grant. He was so cute. And he was a junior, and I was a senior. And so we're going to his house, and we're partying, and I'm throwing up in his flower bed, and it just was so romantic. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's just great. I was awful. And, you know, everybody would ask, what are you going to do when you graduate from high school? go party. I don't know. I think they meant like with your life. They weren't just talking about like that night. But I had no idea. Are you going to go to school? Are you going to work?
I don't know.
I had a friend that was going to UCSB, and she said, why don't you move down there with me? So I said, okay. So me and my other friend moved to Santa Barbara. We actually lived in Isla Vista, a little party town. And it was great. This gross apartment, cockroaches everywhere. It was horrible, but it was fun. And so I got a job. I was going to go to the city college there, but it's right across the street from the beach. And you think, okay, beach, college, beach, for shit. And so I went to the beach every day, and I never went to college. But ended up moving back to Porterville. And, you know, I just always worked. I had no plan for my life whatsoever. All my friends were getting married, having kids, doing the little family thing. I wanted absolutely no part of that whatsoever. I don't want to get married. I don't want kids. No, 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 no. And so I just hang out at their house all the time. They were always, you know, I'm sure they were really glad to see me. Oh, my God, here she comes. And I was telling somebody that today. I said, I feel like I don't have this big badass AA story, so I never really feel like I don't want to go speak somewhere because I don't, you know, some people really have a big story. And when I came here, I heard a lot of, oh, I've been to jail 50,000 times, and I had, you know, how many DUIs, and wives, and husbands, and boyfriends, and girlfriends, and I'm just like, wow, I've never been married, never had any kids, I never got a DUI. It's just things that hadn't happened to me, and so it doesn't have to happen to you that way. You know, you don't have to do every single thing that you hear everybody do just to be able to come to AA. And I think because I was 26 years old when I sobered up, that those same pictures hadn't happened yet. It's not that they weren't or didn't or were not going to happen, it's just they didn't because I was just a little bit younger. And plus it was the 80s. They didn't care. I mean, you get pulled over in the 80s, you're like, sure, everything's fine. You know, I got pulled over a couple times, and down in Santa Barbara, I did the sobriety check with a little wedgie heel. I did good. And they didn't take me to jail. They took the other guys to jail that were with, and they didn't take me. And, you know, I got pulled over on 2nd Street in Porterville one time. I'm going like 70 miles an hour. I left the bar, the Palace, went down 2nd Street, no shoes on. I had this Trans Am. It was a cool car. Damn, and down there, and I got pulled over. Didn't get arrested. I mean, it's not that I shouldn't have. I just didn't. It just didn't happen. And I'm not really going to go back and change that part of my story, I hope, anytime soon. So I'm not going to worry about that. But, so, you know, I moved back to Porterville. I'm just doing nothing. I'm living with my mom. Lived with a couple guys here and there, you know, just for fun. And then I moved back with my mom, and I'm just partying. You know, at this time I meet my husband, and he's my husband now. I didn't get married until I got to AA, but, and we just partied with all his friends. They had this Monday night football thing. We'd go over to their house and drinking, and it was just fun. And, but I get in my car every night. I'm at the end of my drinking at this time. I get in my car every night, and I'm driving home, and I'm just bawling all the way home because I don't know what's wrong with me. And I'm not having that much fun, and I'm drunk off my ass every night, and but not every night. I didn't drink every single day. I was drinking at work. I've always worked in packing houses. When I moved down to Santa Barbara, I came back and I got a job in a packing house. My parents sold their house to a lady that worked at a packing house, so she got me a job there. And I was at Orange Grader for a while, and I got a job in an office, and I got a job in sales, and I've been doing sales for like 30 years. But it's always been really good. I've had wonderful jobs. I don't know why these people put up with me, but I would drink on my lunch hour. You know, you go to the Oak Pit, you're going to drink. Okay, I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to drink. And I'd sit down, and the waitress would bring over a beer. It's like, I haven't heard of stealing, so I'll drink it. You know, and you're drinking again. And then I'm doing the other stuff Susan was talking about in the bathroom. You know, you got to be dating a drug dealer at work because then you get the shit for free. And then, you know, so you got to do that stuff because you don't want to be screwing up at work. And so you're drinking and doing drugs in the bathroom. And then you're wondering, and then you're bawling at the end, and you're wondering, why am I so unhappy? I don't know. And I have to mention that most of those guys were either married, living with somebody, had kids with somebody. I mean, I never picked a nice guy with a job, with no wife, no kids, no. you know, it was the most ridiculous situation I put myself in. And you know, there's a part in the big book that I absolutely love, and it's actually in the sex inventory part, that talks about that, how if we're not sorry for what we've done and our conduct continues to harm others, we're quite sure to drink. And that little line in the big book has kept me from doing a lot of really stupid things my whole sobriety, because I really believe that. And I'm not telling you if you're doing something like that, you're going to get drunk. I am not saying that. I'm saying for me, I think honesty and is just a big deal for me in sobriety. I can't continue to do the things I was doing when I was drinking if I want to stay sober and be happy. And I can do anything I want in sobriety, but I have to be willing to face the consequences. And I've heard Susan say that a lot of times, because just because I sober up doesn't mean I still don't think about crazy things. And sometimes, you know, you think, oh, that's boring. This is boring. Let's go to an meeting on 39-105. Ooh, that sounds like fun. You know, wow. You know, but, I mean, we're over here just cracking up. And it's just like, how would I ever know that I could have so much fun with all these women and all these people? I'm looking at John over there. I just want to start crying because John called me tonight and he called Susan. What are you guys at? What are you doing? Are you having dinner? Blah, blah, blah. I told him, I'm sorry, we just ate dinner. And he goes, well, I'm with my wife. I go, oh, great. You're not coming to the speaker meeting? I don't come before your wife. Come on. And he made it. Yay! So anyway, it's like, you know, we can just make all these jokes and have fun. And I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not. It's like, it's a lot of fun. And we don't have to be hurting ourselves. Let's just not say hurting other people, but hurting ourselves. Because I think that's one of the big ones for me, is why was I doing all that stuff? Was I doing all that stuff because I was drinking, or was I drinking because I was doing all that stuff? You know, I don't really know. Because if I can block it all out, so I'm going to keep doing whatever I'm doing, I don't have to think about. But it doesn't matter. You know, the fact was my conduct hurt a lot of people, and it was very selfish. And that's where the steps come in my life, that I can change if I really want to. I'm going all over the place with this story. But a 5-year sobriety, I'm working in sales at this office. I told somebody, this girl was really not nice to me. I want to get that very clear. She was not nice at all. Every time I talked to her, she was not nice. And so finally, one day, I just had it. I go, you know what? Why don't you kiss my A and F off? And she goes, and I hung up on. And so I'm in this little sales office. There's like 5 or 6 people around, and they all just go. Like, and that's another book. If you really don't think you're an alcoholic, start telling all your stories to people that don't drink a lot, and when they go back, then you're like, you might need to be here on Friday night when it's 105. Definitely. So I tell this girl, hang up, and everybody's just like, staring at me. I'm like, what? And so, anyway, they didn't really think it was funny. My boss laid me off from work for 2 weeks with no pay. And I'm like, God, I told her I'm sorry. I told the rest that I was sorry. I did the 8 and 9. I mean, what do they want from me? I do understand. And so, they didn't care. They laid me off for 2 weeks with no pay. And so, me and John went, I think it was you. We painted Central Office. We went and visited Bob. We did all kinds of stuff. But, so this whole 2 weeks I'm off, and I'm thinking, holy hell, am I going to have a job? And so they let me come back. And a week later, I get offered another job for more money. I'm going to be assistant manager, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the hell? This has nothing to do with me. You know, anything that's ever happened to me, I got a job where I told somebody that, I got that job like 2 weeks before my unemployment. My unemployment's going to be up like in a week. I hadn't worked, and here they offered me this job 2 weeks before. I mean, everything happens exactly the way it's supposed to. So, anyway, I'm going back tracking now. So, I'm drinking just, I think I wasn't a puky drinker, but just miserable. I wake up in the morning, and you talk about the worst hangover in the world of Coke hangover. Coke hangover is like the worst. Worse than any other depressing. I hate everybody. Everybody hates me. So, I quit the drugs. I quit the drugs on my own. I could not quit drinking on my own. I can't drink. What is the thing? You know, drugs. I mean, that's a pleasure. That's a shit right there. Drinking? Oh, my God. No. I can drink if I want. And that's why I can drink if I want. I can have a beer if I want. So my last day drinking is, I have no idea. Susan says, if you don't know your sobriety date, you don't have one. I'm like, whatever.
I know. I have one.
It's somewhere in May, somewhere in there. And so I picked May 15th because it's a portable fair, and I knew I was sober at the portable fair because none of my friends would talk to me or my husband in the beer booth because we're not drinking. And they're looking at us like, shit the hell away from us. So I know it's portable fair, I was sober. So I picked May 15th. So right in between there sometime, I go to this party, and my husband has this friend, and it's cool and everything. Party, okay, we're just going to have fun. I can have a couple beers if I want. So, that wasn't true because I was drunk by the end of the night and whatever. It was bad. So I quit drinking and I told my boyfriend next time. I said, if you want to quit, fine. I don't care what you do. I'm not going to drink anymore. So, I started going to meetings. I'm going to this group therapy. This is the whole thing. I go to this group therapy, and most of the people in the group are alcoholics, addicts, and they introduce themselves in this group. I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict. I'm like, why the hell would you say that in front of people? I mean, that's so stupid. I didn't get it. But so finally, this guy in the group says, why don't you come to this meeting with me? It was Exeter meeting, 2:30. I go, we go to this meeting, smoking, everybody's smoking. You guys are coming in that are new, they don't smoke anymore. It's so cool. I wasn't a smoker. So this meeting is smoke, and everybody's laughing, and that really just... pissed me off. I'm like, at this point in my life, there is no laughing, there's no fun, I'm not having fun, I'm pissed off, I can't drink, I hate all of you. And everybody's talking, and I'm just thinking, oh my God. So went to that meeting with him, and then I came to a meeting in Tulare. It was a candlelight meeting. I can't even tell you what night it was. So I'm meeting in Tulare. Because see, you know, you don't want to go to a meeting in Porterville because people know that you have a drinking problem. I'm peeing in parking lots at the bar, and this is back in the 80s when you wore jumpsuits, so you have to take the whole thing off in the parking lot, and this guy's looking at me, I'm like, what? And get out of here. And so, but now I don't want people to think I have a drinking problem. I go to AA meeting in Porterville. So I drive to Tulare, and David's one of the first people I ever met, and I love you, David. And but it's a candlelight meeting, and it's so cool. You're sitting in the back, we're like a little cat, I'm sitting back there just going, don't look at me, don't talk to me, please, 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 please. And then a guy at the meeting says, oh, you need to go to Springville. They have this Springville meeting, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. So I go to the Springville meeting, where they used to have it. It's not there anymore, but fluorescent lights and a microphone at the front, and you have to walk up and sit down in the microphone and talk at the front. From the candlelight meeting to the microphone, fluorescent light meeting, I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm never getting up there talking, ever, ever, ever. And I wish I did. But, I just started going to meetings, and I just took suggestions from these people in this group. I'm going to meetings. You know, people handed me their phone numbers. I'm like, okay, when am I supposed to do this? You know, they talked about, well, they told me when I got here to do this, and this next speaker would say, well, they told me to get a sponsor. Well, they told me to work the steps. They told me to buy book. So I'm just sitting around waiting for those they people to come over and start telling me what to do. Because apparently, somebody doesn't know what to do. I don't know who these they people are, but they're not really on the ball because nobody's talking to me. And so I go, okay. So I keep going to meetings, and I'm not drinking. And I actually, so that date is my sobriety date. Ever since I came to AA, I have not had a drink since then or any other mind-altering substances. Not that I haven't wanted to. I wanted to do the Fen-Phen pills when they came out. I'm like, ooh, that'll be so much weight. And so I talked to my friend Bob, the pharmacist in Porterville, that's in the program. I go, Bob, what do you think? He goes, really? It's just speed. I'm like, God. Okay, so I can't do that. And I wasn't going to call my sponsor, of course, because I knew she would say no. No. I'm going to ask Bob, the pharmacist. He's like, silly. Okay, I won't do the Fen-Phen, whatever. But I'm just going to meetings, you know, and I'm not drinking, and that's about it. I love the meetings because it was a social. My thing, I'm the social party girl. The party was at my house. My dad worked up in the mountains after this farming thing. We sold all that, and he went to work. He would drive logging trucks up in the mountains. So my mom would go up there on the weekends and be with him, and I'd be home by myself. My sister got married, like, 19. And I got the house to myself. You know, we lived way out in the country, so the party was on at my house all the time. And I loved it. I loved the party. I loved the people. I loved the crowds. I still do. I love all of that stuff. And the bars. I was a bar drinker. I loved all that. And so I sort of lost my whole time. So anyway, I'm going to meetings. I love the meetings because it was social. I didn't really buy a big book. I didn't really work the staff. I got a sponsor. I didn't really call her. She was busy, you know. She's really busy. And if you're saying that crap, it's bullshit. Your sponsor's not too busy. Just freaking call them and shut up and quit saying they're too busy because it's bullcrap. I just thought she was too busy. She was going to school to get her teaching degree. I'm like, oh, don't want to bother her. So I got another sponsor, came back to her, you know, worked the step. And I remember calling her one day. I'd done the fourth step. We did a fifth step, and I'm just like, ugh. I feel like crap. And I'm sitting in work one day, and I go to the bathroom and call her, and I'm like, is this it? Like, is this it? Because I'm really not feeling it. You know, everybody says, oh, I did a first step, and then God came down and blessed me. You know, shit like that. And you're going, I feel like shit. And so she goes, yeah, this is about it. I'm going, great. And then there was a little liquor store across the street. It was really funny. They used to say, that liquor store's going out of business. Where it says, you quit drinking. And then all the guys are working in front of me. But they didn't go out of business. I'd watch about 15 beer trucks every Friday pull up to that liquor store. The whole store, I bet, was as big as that bathroom. And there's like the Coors truck, the Corona truck, the Budweiser truck. But I'm thinking, where are they putting beer? They've got to have like a basement that goes to China or something. But they didn't go out of business because of me. But you know, I'm just going to work. I'm not drinking. You know what? I can't say life was all that great. It took a while for me to start feeling it. You know, when little things started happening in my life, I quit that job. I'm going to go be a court reporter. You know how much money it costs to be a court reporter? Holy hell. And then you don't make any money while you're going to school. And then you got to go like 5 years to pass the thing. And I'm thinking, this is a really stupid idea. So I start looking for a job. I get a job, and I'm thinking this is a job that is, you know, not what I want to do. I was in sales, and I'm over here being this other thing I was doing, and I didn't like it. I call my husband every day, and I'm like, leave my boyfriend. I haven't married him yet. I go, hey, do I have to work here? He's like, just calm down. Don't quit your job. Okay, hang up. Every day. Or, I hate this place. Okay. So in a couple months, they offered me a sales job, and it was more money I'd ever made in my whole life, and it was like, okay, just calm down. You know, my thing is I have to have everything right now. Hurry up. Don't you see how great I'm doing? I need all this stuff. And, you know, it all happens exactly when it's supposed to. And so that's the job where I told the girl. So then I moved back to, well, I've always lived in Portugal. But, so I got let go from this other job I went to. I was the assistant manager there. They were doing downsizing, and I was the one that got let go. And the thing about that was the most coolest thing about that whole thing is everybody was calling me, all my AA friends. And I'm like wanting to start bawling, not because I lost my job, but because of all my friends and people calling me and everything's going to be okay. And the place I work now is a packing house, and they called me back. We want you to come back. And this was the third time I've worked there. And I stole money from them, and I made amends for that. I used to steal the Coke money for beer. I'm like, I need money. There's all this change. I'm like, what? In my purse. And, you know, so beer seems really cheap now. They sell a whole bunch of beer for nothing. I'm like, it's really expensive when I was drinking. So I just take the money, and so I went and paid them back and made the amends and all that. So they asked me to come back and work there, and I'm still there. I've been there like 8 years. And, you know, it's amazing when I think about stuff like that they would even want me to come back there. And so I'm not even out of work for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be on unemployment for like a year and screw off and have fun and I'm not or working again. So, but I think we were talking about this at dinner tonight, how meetings are very important. And I hear that all the time. You do 90 meetings in 90 days or how many meetings are you going to? And I'm the one who says that a lot. How many meetings you've been to this week when somebody's going to crap? You know, I always ask them. But I don't think the meetings are fabulous. It's where I hear the message. It's where I get fed. It's where I meet wonderful people. It's where, but this isn't the deal. This is the deal. This 12 steps, the 12 and 12 is the deal. And if I don't do the 12 steps, I'm going to skirt around these meetings and be the little party girl and still have fun and flirt with all the guys and do whatever I want and go home and I'm not happy. And I don't know why I'm not happy, because I've never worked the steps. And it's so important even for me now. I've been sober 23 years, and probably the last 4 years of my sobriety have been some of the hardest that I've ever had in my whole life. I don't really want to talk about it, because, you know, part of it's an anonymity thing, part of it's between, you know, my home life. And but, you know, I skated on just life's good. I love AA. I love everybody. I love blah, blah, blah. And then I kind of went, okay, I'm not doing too good. And I'm not, I don't really like these meetings anymore. I don't like these people anymore. I'm having some problems. I don't like it. And so I got a new sponsor. And it was not that my sponsor wasn't qualified. You know, she's a wonderful person. She helped me. She saved my life. And but these were other issues I needed to work on that I knew this person had worked on. And he's a man. I'm not suggesting any woman, you know, with 30 days get a man sponsor. I really don't think that's a good idea. But, you know, being sober over 20 years, I got a man sponsor, and he helped me tremendously with these issues. And it's been some relationship stuff and things that came up for me from my past that just was not good. And, you know, I've been dealing with it for a couple of years, and it's like, it's better. It was a lot better. I don't know if I got into some depression. I don't really know. We were talking about it the other night. You know, somebody asked me, well, what is depression? You know, well, I think it's just different for everybody. Some people, it's, you know, they're down. They can't even get out of bed. Some people, it's just, you're kind of flatlined, you know, and that's kind of what I've been doing. I've still been going to meetings, doing everything, but just not feeling the, like I used to. And so it's coming back, and I think the most important thing, and I started emailing a friend, he's been sober a very long time, and I talked to him a lot, and it's just looking at things a little bit different. Okay, maybe cutting out a few of the things I'm doing, and maybe sit home and read the big book. Maybe get together with somebody and do the steps. Maybe, you know, I had to do a fourth and a fifth and 6, 7, 8, 9 and do things that I hadn't done in a really long time. And it's really painful stuff to look at, but it's worth it. I mean, it's not going anywhere. I'm either going to still keep repeating the same bad habits, or I'm going to change them. And, you know, all this time I never thought about drinking, but I thought about doing a lot of really stupid things that could really mess up my life. And I didn't, and I haven't, and I'm not going to, but the only reason is because I have friends in AA that were there for me all the time. And, you know, they even told me, if you decide whatever you decide to do, I don't care. You know, we still love you. And it was like, wow. So I think it's so important for me to be in the middle of AA, because I think I see people come in and they skirt in around, and then I think, oh, I haven't seen someone in a while. What happened to them? You know, and if I'm in the middle of AA, it's going to take me a long time to get out. And if I'm on the outskirts, I'm out the door and nobody really remembers me. What was her name? Well, where has she been? Nobody cares. You know, it's not that I don't care. We care, but you just forget. You know, if I don't see you, I don't remember. Oh, yeah, I forgot what happened to so-and-so. If I'm in the middle, it's going to take me a long ass time to get out. You know, I'm going to have people calling me, where are you, what are you doing, what's happening. And just my opinion, I have to let people know what's going on. If I'm sitting at home and isolating and not talking about it, I'm gone, you know, or I'm thinking about doing some really stupid shit. And that's another one. Even in sobriety, you can tell people that, and they go, are you crazy? You're thinking about it. You're crazy. And talk about crazy. And this makes me feel good. I went to go pick up Susan tonight. It's 5 o'clock. I drive by Veterans Park in Portugal. This dude is running. It's 105 with a sweatshirt on. I'm thinking, I thought I was crazy. No, there's more crazy people in Portugal, not just me. So, I don't care how much weight you're going to lose, buddy. We'll get some of those pens in. Don't get it. Anyway, if you're not an alcoholic, I'll get you some. But I'm just like, wow. I mean, I think the most important thing for me is keeping current with a couple people. I have a sponsor. He lives out of town, but I email him. I talk to him. But I have other friends I talk to, too. And I have a great support group. We started a new meeting in Porterville on Wednesday night. It's a gay AA meeting, and it's open to everybody at 6 o'clock, and everybody is welcome to come. I'm just, like, my a lot of things have changed in my sobriety, and, you know, people I hung out with when I first got here and things I do different. Things I used to say all the time, I don't really say anymore. You know, I don't know what's right for you. I don't know what's right for you. I don't know what you need to do. My friend Scott always says, I don't know what you need to do to stay sober, but I better find out what I need to do to stay sober. And what I need to do is say yes when somebody asks me, even when I want to, yeah, I don't want to call them back for no reason. Okay, I'm like, oh, shit. And I called them back. And so, and just say yes. And I can't tell you, if I had to want to do all of this stuff, I'd have been gone a long time ago. I don't have to want to do it. I just do it. When somebody asks me to help, I say okay. Somebody asks me to sponsor them, I say okay. When, you know, somebody needs a ride, I say okay. We do this for fun and for free, and I'm not going to go on about that because I got somebody really mad at me the other day in a meeting. We do this for fun and for free. And I don't ask for money for rides from people. I don't do anything like that. We do this for fun and for free. And if anybody makes you feel that way, that you owe them something, you know, ask somebody else. Just ask somebody else. I'm not going to say any more about that. But I am just really grateful to be sober. Today my life is, I've been married for 19 years. Oh my God. And I don't have any kids, so I never had any kids. My husband has a son. He's 32 years old. We have 3 grandkids. I have 2 nephews. And my mom's still alive. My dad died when I was sober. Well, my dad died about 7 or 8 years ago. My dad was a full-blown alcoholic. He and my mom split up when I was like 19 years old. He moved to the mountains and lived in North Fork. In a trailer up there, and he actually got remarried. His wife was really nice. I met her a couple times, but you know, he spent most of his time in the bar. There's a bar up there. What's the name of it? No, the Buckhorn. There's a bar in North Park called the Buckhorn, and my dad was there a lot. And you know, that was his people, and these are my people. You know, it's just like we all got to be where, and I was okay with it. It's just like he needs to be where he's comfortable. And he was a mountain man. He just loved all that stuff, and he got real sick in the hospital, lost a bunch of weight, and then he fell and broke his neck. They had to do surgery. Then he got some kind of infection in the hospital, and he wouldn't go back. He says, "Well, I got that damn infection in the hospital. Why am I going to go back there?" I'm like, "Oh, that's brilliant," I'm thinking. And he died, you know. And I went up and saw him. His wife called me one day, and it was the day of the breakfast, and she's like, "He's going to die, you need to come up here, what do I do?" So my friends called me, they did the breakfast, I went up and saw my dad, and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, we're going to have this big spiritual conversation, and he's going to tell me all this stuff, and I sat there, and he sat there, and was like, okay, and, you know, it was okay, that's just my dad. He wasn't a talker, he wasn't a big, you know, I love you kind of guy, that's just my dad. And so he died, and the day he died, it was a central office meeting, and I went to the central office meeting. I was like, what am I going to do? Stay home by myself, you know, and be all depressed. And you know, I went to the meeting, and I went up and, you know, helped his wife the next day, and we planned the funeral. And what wasn't a funeral? My dad. And I mean, I know I talk about this like it's funny, but it is kind of, it's cool. His memorial service was at the bar, and they just had like a potluck, and here's my dad's chair. They had it, you know, tilted up at the bar, and they had a glass there of whatever he drank, some kind of whiskey, and they had this little figurine thing that was like this, a little, you know, sitting right there, and I go, hey, that's kind of how I remember him. So, you know, I don't know, I thought it was cool, and I just thought, you know, these are his friends, and then I went home and went to the Saturday meeting that night, and I was with my friends, and it's just, I don't know. I wasn't trying to save him. I didn't try to fix him. I did tell him that one time I was an alcoholic and I went to AA meetings, and that's about as far as that conversation went. But, you know, it's in my family. Mostly on my dad's side, on my mom. But, you know, I got a couple nephews. I'm still trying to figure out which one's going to be, and I think it's probably going to be both of them. But just like Susan said, you know, I just want it to be here when any other people need it. And AA is I've been told that, you know, I'm bossy, or I get angry in meetings when people are chit-chatting and all that. I can't handle it because this is the most important thing in my life. If I'm not sober, I have nothing. I don't have a husband. I don't have a job. I don't have nothing. And when there's bullshit going on, I don't like it. And so I get very serious sometimes, and it doesn't mean against anybody. It's just, it's so important to me. We've had a few people in Porterville commit suicide, you know, in the program. A guy made it a year, and he hung himself, and his wife found him, and, you know, just met with his sponsor and another gentleman the night before, and the next day hanged himself. So how do I know I'm not sitting next to that guy thinking about that, you know? How do I know? And if I'm talking or I'm not paying attention, then I'm not listening that somebody needs. And I can't save anybody. I'm not saying it's my job to save somebody that wants to do that, but I can listen, you know, and be polite, and that's very important to me. And, you know, I was just taught, you know, little things in AA. I get to a meeting on time. If I can't respect a meeting, I need to get there on time, and I need to introduce myself if I've never seen someone before and say hi to them, and, you know, make them feel welcome, like people made me feel welcome. And I've been to meetings out of town, and not one person talked to me, and I've been to meetings where people, you know, and I just want to be the example of, how did it make me feel when I got here? You know, I want to make somebody feel welcome and to please come back. And, you know, I went to therapy this last couple of years, and I'm not going there anymore, and I'm coming to meetings, and I think everything, you just work whatever works for you. You know, the meetings and therapy and whatever you need, I mean, just do it, but... you know, get a sponsor, somebody you can relate to, and talk to them. And if that's not the person, get somebody else. And this isn't a popularity contest. That's what I tell any girl I sponsor. I know, you're not comfortable with me, go find somebody you're going to talk to, please. I know this is not the popularity thing that's going on here. So, you know, the steps are really important. I am forever grateful that I'm not the same person I was. Besides the F-bombs. But other than that, I'm really not the same person I was 20 years ago, and that's a good thing. And, you know, it doesn't mean I don't think about it. It just means that I don't have to act on it. And thank you, Rick, for asking me to share.